And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
To the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We're with you till 3 on this Throwback Thursday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, what should we expect from Clemson and South Carolina's offenses this year? Plus, NFL preseason truly begins tonight. It's week one. Everyone's in action this weekend. And while the preseason may not matter much, who are the players, the coaches, even the teams that are under the most pressure this preseason? Get to that coming up. Which teams have the quarterbacks good enough to try to win a Super Bowl this year? Could Trevor Lawrence be getting another weapon in Jacksonville? Plus, is name, image, and likeness actually proving why players should not be paid in college sports? And a Clemson quarterback is somewhat anti-name, image, and likeness. We'll get to that coming up later on. And here we are on August 12th, and somehow the Atlanta Braves are back in first place. Plus, I already have a best bet for tonight's NFL preseason. We have our wrestling wrap-up. We'll catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery an hour from now, and a whole lot more between now and 3 o'clock. Tonight is the Field of Dreams game in Major League Baseball, so of course we have to talk about that. And why I continue to say Field of Dreams is incredibly overrated as a movie. We'll do all that and more over the next couple of hours. And you can always join the conversation as well. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Thursday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, the only thing better than Friday Eve is Friday, and that's something to look forward to right now. Sure? But so far, things are going quite well. About you?
Yeah, not too bad. Preseason football tonight, Field of Dreams game tonight, weekend coming up tomorrow, maybe tonight for you, so not too bad. Let me start with this. What should we expect from the offenses this year for South Carolina and Clemson? Let's start with the Gamecocks, because I saw this article on The Athletic. Josh Kendall with another great job talking with new offensive coordinator Marcus Satterfield about what we should expect from this year's offense. What is the Gamecocks offense going to look like under Marcus Satterfield? And he said you'd have to watch 2019 LSU. You'd also have to watch when I had P.J. Walker at Temple in 2015. You'd have to watch what we did last year with the Panthers. And you'd have to watch a little bit of Oklahoma, where, of course, Shane Beamer came from. I love this type of stuff, right? This time of year, everyone, as the cliche goes, everyone's undefeated. And this type of year, everyone's in first place. And everyone is always feeling good and excited. So when asked about what to expect from your offense, well, go back and check out the 2019 LSU team that has one of the greatest offenses we've ever seen. Go check out Oklahoma that has maybe the best offensive coach in the country. All right, go check out even the Panthers last year with Joe Brady, that coordinator from the 2019 historic LSU offense. Right, let's talk about setting the bar high, your expectations. Talk about getting a fan base excited. That's what we're going to look like. We're going to look like a little bit of Joe Burrow's LSU and a little bit of Christian McCaffrey's Carolina Panthers and a little bit of Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma. And even when P.J. Walker, the best quarterback we had at Temple, when he played there as well, and we're going to blend it all together. Satterfield continued to say, we're going to do some good stuff. Luke Doty said that in the build-up to the season, they've been watching clips of the Rams, the Raiders, the Panthers, the Packers, the Dolphins, old clips of Satterfield's time at Baylor and Temple, clips of the Saints, the Patriots, all sorts of teams thrust in there. And for South Carolina, offensively, they certainly need to try to take a step forward because they have not ranked higher than 10th in offense in the SEC very often. In fact, they've done it just once the last 6 years, finishing higher than 10th once in the last 6 years. Last year, they scored fewer than half as many points as Alabama did. So they're still quite a ways away from the best teams in the conference. Satterfield would continue to describe his offense for the Gamecocks by saying, there won't be dinking and dunking. It's a pro-style offense, not a West Coast offense. And Satterfield said that they'll be committed to throwing it downfield. Other points of emphasis, they are going to huddle up offensively as they prepare these guys for the NFL. Right? College football is part of the problem, especially for offensive linemen. College football, it's a hurry-up, spread offense, no huddle, just get on the ball, get the signs from the sideline. Then these guys go to the NFL. They're not used to huddling. They're not used to getting the play into the helmet of the quarterback and relay it to the guys in the huddle. They go out, they run the play. Instead, you're looking, right in college, you're looking at the sideline, looking at the different posters they're holding up. Oh, that's the play. Okay, we're changing things. It's different. The Gamecocks, they said they're going to huddle, in part to help guys for the next level. They also want to throw it to running backs more. Because of that good ground game they had a year ago, if it's quite as good this year, that will allow them to do plenty of play-action passing. They talked a lot about their efficient or effective play-action passing so far this summer. And Marcus Satterfield also said that quarterback Luke Doty will look like a freshman. At times, we will look like the 49ers, is what he said. And at other times, you'll scratch your head and wonder, what are we doing? Now, there'll be growing pains. There'll be ups and downs. Going back to what I said yesterday when talking about quarterbacks, like a Zach Wilson or even Josh Allen before he turned into the quarterback he was a year ago, where you could see those flashes. You had to remove the negatives, but you could see some of the positives and see that potential. The potential would flash. Expect some of that from Luke Doty. But Satterfield, after comparing his offense to Lincoln Riley and 2019 LSU, he also said about Luke Doty, he reminds me a lot of Drew Brees. Talk about setting the bar high. That's why I always love this time of year. Everyone's 0-0, especially if you have a new coaching staff. You're feeling good, confident, positive. You're not jaded just yet. You haven't been beaten down by the struggles of a football season. Oh, yeah, our offense. You want to know what our offense is going to be like? Go watch LSU. Watch Oklahoma, some of the best offenses in the country. Oh, our quarterback, Luke Doty, who's only played a couple of games. Oh, he looks a lot like Drew Brees, let me tell you. Now, for the Gamecocks, throwing will make the difference, of course. In all teams in college football, you have to throw the ball to win. You can no longer rely on the run game. Football has changed so much, so drastically over the years, that now it's about the quarterbacks. And so the Gamecocks, despite lacking playmakers, will have to be more efficient and effective in the passing game. But offensively, they could have one of the best rushing attacks in the SEC. We broke this down on the show about a week ago with what they have in the backfield. Returning the top rusher, adding a four-star recruit to that backfield, and then also having a dual-threat quarterback in Luke Doty will certainly help. Doty was the number four dual-threat recruit. And so that helps. Because not only will he be able to contribute to the run game, not only will it make that quarterback versatile, where as a defense, you have to defend against both the pass and the run from the quarterback position, opens the door to some RPOs, but also because it allows that young quarterback to get out of trouble. As Satterfield said, he's going to look like a freshman. Technically, he is, because last year did not count towards your eligibility because of COVID. Everybody got that year back. So technically, last year was like a redshirt, almost like an understudy type of season. This year now, no pandemic accounts, right? New coach. The Gamecocks last year were out of it very quickly. This year, actually hoping to win a few games, maybe just in the non-conference, right? But you get a few wins early. And Doty, it's kind of like starting fresh. New staff, more of a normal season. You get your freshman year back. He'll look like a freshman at times. But what helps the young quarterbacks is when they're mobile, and that can get them out of trouble. Right? In the NFL, we see this a lot. Kyler Murray had early success. Josh Allen has. Lamar Jackson. Even like a Deshaun Watson. Patrick Mahomes to a certain degree. Now, Mahomes is a great arm talent, but at times, right, a play would break down or he had to get out of trouble, he can make a play with his legs. Meanwhile, the quarterbacks that are more about staying in the pocket or trying to throw the football can struggle. Sam Darnold, Dwayne Haskins, Josh Rosen. Because that's just your safety valve. When you can take off, you drop back, you see something that doesn't look right or you're not comfortable or you can't read the defense or your first read is taken away and you're not ready yet, you're not developed as a young enough quarterback to be able to go through your progressions and find another option, just take off. Right, get something out of it. Make something happen. We see it all the time from young quarterbacks. They don't stand in the pocket long enough. They're a little skittish. They don't want to allow the play to develop. Clock's ticking fast in their head. They got to bail. They got to get out of there. First sign of pressure, they're off and running. But it can help because at least you get something out of it. Sure, if you have better pocket awareness and wait around, you can maybe find a better play downfield. But it's better than taking a sack or rushing a throw, you know, throwing an interception or just throwing it away. Make something happen. If you're uncomfortable, if you don't like the play, if it's breaking down on you, you're not a veteran that can slide in the pocket, keep the play alive, find an open receiver downfield, just tuck it and run. And when you have that athletic ability that you could turn those into some positive plays, it's always beneficial for you in that offense. That's what helps the young quarterbacks, that as you wait for them to continue to grow, to be able to read a defense, to get that better pocket presence and awareness, to become more comfortable against the pass rush. In the meantime, they can still make plays for you, maybe not with their arm, but with their feet. And that's the advantage of Luke Doty. Marcus Satterfield, the offensive coordinator, said, I guarantee you, the first time he gets pressured against Eastern Illinois, he'll take off. That's what young quarterbacks do, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. It makes it a little bit easier for those quarterbacks because, again, at least you're making plays happen. Sam Darnold, we all know the quote he said on Monday Night Football against the Patriots, right? I'm seeing ghosts out there. But when you have that other tool in your tool belt, when you have that other option, that other weapon in the arsenal that you can go to, you're seeing ghosts, okay, well, take off and run. At least get a few yards. Set us up for a shorter second or third down. Make something happen. Make some sort of play instead of just looking lost out there, throwing it all over the place. So offensively for the Gamecocks, lacking playmakers on the outside, should have a really good backfield, one of the best in the SEC. And we'll have a young, developing quarterback in a new system with not an overly experienced offensive coordinator. But the positive is that when those plays break down, when you're uncomfortable, just take off and run. It allows these younger quarterbacks a little bit more of a grace period as they develop. Right? Yeah, sure, he's not reading a defense great. He's not good enough in the pocket, but at least he's making something happen and doing it with his legs. For Clemson, offensively, what should we expect from Clemson this year? Well, they lost their top three wide receivers from a year ago. They lost their top two rushers from a year ago. Obviously lost their number one quarterback, the best quarterback that they've ever had. They have only one upperclassman on the offensive line this season. And while they return most of their defense, a lot of the new pieces are on offense. It's the offense that's dealing with the changes, which is interesting because the defense was the concern a year ago with how they performed in the biggest game. But that defense is bringing back a lot of pieces. Should have one of the best defensive lines in the country. Certainly more experience on the defense. And the offense, we don't seem to have as many questions or concerns about the offense, even though there are more moving pieces offensively. Like I said, top three wide receivers gone. Top two rushers gone. Quarterback, most important position. Trevor Lawrence, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, gone. Offensive line, only one upperclassman on that offensive line. They lost their best offensive lineman from a year ago. But you have DJ stepping into the quarterback position who looked really good last year and I'm sure will be just fine this year. The backfield, there are some questions in that backfield, but I imagine those questions will be answered relatively quickly by Will Shipley. Right, Lynn J. Dixon is the man who's supposed to be the starter. We hear a lot about him, but I think it's Shipley, the highly recruited freshman who is going to take over pretty quick. He'll show his ability, the flashes, you'll see like, oh yeah, this kid is something. Apparently one of the fastest running backs in the country. That can be an option or a weapon for you, even in the passing game out of the backfield. Will Shipley will take over that spot and be a dynamic weapon in this offense. And then you get to the wide receivers, and this is where Clemson is truly stacked. If you look at Clemson's top five wide receivers, all big, long, tall, athletic. Justin Ross is 6'4". E.J. Williams, 6'3". Frank Ladson, 6'3". Joseph Nagata, 6'3". Aju Aju, 6'3". Top five receivers are all 6'3" or even bigger. Look at Alabama and the success they had in the passing game the last couple years, putting, what, four wide receivers in the first round? None of them were over 6'1". Now, they were a little bit maybe on the quicker side. All right, there's two schools of thought. It's actually kind of the new school approach that you want those smaller, quick guys, the slot position has become more important in football. And you just want to get them the ball in the open field and let them go to work. They're fast. They're quick. Back in the day, it was a little bit more about size. You wanted big receivers. They could go get jump balls. Right? They could get physical at the corners now. The rules have changed where the corners can't be quite as physical, can't be quite as hands-on. But back in the day, right, if you're going to throw it, think like a Randy Moss, even a T.O., you wanted those big receivers that are still quick, athletic, but they could go get a jump ball. They could get physical. Now it's that we want a quicker guy that's just going to run past everyone. They're going to blow away everybody. Kind of two schools of thought. For Alabama, they were successful with those smaller wide receivers. It's the concern for them now going into the NFL. A Devontae Smith, a Jerry Jeudy. It's like, are they big enough to handle the beatdown of an NFL season or to go over the middle of the field? But for Clemson, they have plenty of size. And when you look at how Clemson fared a couple years ago, when they beat Alabama in that national championship game and beat them down, what, 44-16? They did it with wide receivers that had size like this. And Alabama, at the time, couldn't do anything about it. Remember, they had Ross, who was healthy at the time, T. Higgins, who was still on the team, both 6'4". And those two combined in that national championship game for the two wide receiver touchdown catches and for a total of 234 yards. They ate up Alabama. They were too physical. They were too big. They were catching those, if you want to call them, some 50-50 balls. They were making plays. They had 234 yards between the two of them in that national championship. The rest of Clemson's wide receivers had a total of 79 yards. Hunter Renfrow, as great as he was, did nothing in that game. Undersized. Too small. Maybe not athletic enough. But it was the two big receivers that Clemson had, Ross and Higgins, as they went on to score 44 points when we first started to see the cracks in that great defense that Saban always has in Alabama. And Alabama had no answer for that offense. And it was the big receivers making plays. And I'm not talking, when I say big, right? Yeah, oftentimes you think like 6'7". In football, a big receiver is just simply 6'3", 6'4", athletic, strong, long, wide wingspan that can get down the field, make jump ball, make catches on jump balls. Right? That's a big receiver. And the short receivers are more like 6 foot. That's an average American walking around in the streets. But when you talk about a wide receiver, and well, he's only 6 feet. He's pretty small. But for these wide receivers that Clemson has, their top five are all 6'3 or taller. So there are some questions, at least in terms of replacing some important pieces. There are some questions that you at least need to see answered. I think they will be, right? I think we all imagine DJ will be just fine at quarterback. I think Will Shipley will be just fine in the backfield. He'll take over that position by the end of the year. And at the wide receiver position, I think Clemson is stacked with five guys 6'3 or taller. When they won that national championship, they had size like that. It's hard to defend a lot of size like that, let alone five of them. Against Alabama in 2018, they had only two guys, both 6'4". They ate their lunch. Two touchdowns, 234 yards. Everyone else didn't do a whole lot for Clemson. But Alabama had no answer for that size. And now this year, they have five receivers that are essentially that big, including Justin Ross coming back. For Clemson, at the wide receiver position, that's where they're stacked. And that helps a quarterback like DJ Uiagalelei break in. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones. Rob is with us. Rob, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I'm all right. How you doing today?
Doing well. What's up?
Well, I just kind of wanted to touch on, you were mentioning Will Shipley and Lynn J. Dixon, but the guy that you're not mentioning that I think is going to have probably a bigger impact than either one of them out of the backfield this year is Kobe Pace. I'm fairly certain he's the first running back as of now. I mean, he's number one on the depth chart as of now. Shipley, I could see him moving to the slot in situational timing because he's so advanced as a pass catcher at this stage, but he's definitely a running back, kind of a Christian McCaffrey kind of style. Not drawing equivalency between their skills at the moment, but just their play style and things that they do well. I would be shy. I mean, Shipley may end up with the starting role by the end of the year, but my man, keep an eye out for Kobe Pace. I think he's going to make moves this year.
All right. Hey, appreciate it, Rob. We'll keep an eye on Kobe Pace. Well, talent in that backfield with the opportunity to step up. Dabo Swinney about Will Shipley said he's not like a typical freshman. Right? Five-star recruit who's one of the fastest guys in the country, or believed to be. And I do get the comparisons to McCaffrey, and I think that's where he'll be a big role for you. You can put him in the slot. You can throw it to him out of the backfield. We'll see how he does running between the tackles because he's not that big. He's like 5'11", 200, I think he's listed at. But I think Shipley will be a real star, and there's plenty of talent in that backfield. Young talent. You have the veteran Lynjay Dixon, but then you have Shipley, who has the speed, and then Phil, Maffa, who's like the power back, who's also, you know, who they also brought in. Then you have Kobe Pace. Maybe Michael Dukes does something as well. So some talent in that backfield, just waiting to see which one of them will step up. That's what to expect from the offenses for both of these teams this year for South Carolina and Clemson. South Carolina, there'll be some growing pains, but at least you have an athletic quarterback and a good run game to try to make it a little bit easier along the way. For Clemson, there are some questions that need to be answered. A lot of moving pieces. But you have a talented quarterback. We know that. You have some talent in that backfield, and you got a pretty stacked wide receiving core with some size this year. Coming up, the NFL preseason begins essentially tonight. We had that Hall of Fame game, but tonight is week one of the NFL preseason, truly. Who's actually under the most pressure this preseason? That's right, in the preseason. Get to that coming up. It's the Mar Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
The NFL preseason begins tonight. Who's actually under the most pressure this preseason? That's right. You may think these games don't matter. I think there are a few people facing some pressure the next couple of weeks. And I'll let you know who they are in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. It is a Throwback Thursday, so we'll be talking about Field of Dreams and baseball movies a little bit later on with tonight's Field of Dreams game. We'll break all that down. It is also National Vinyl Record Day. I have my shirt on today, Full Moon Fever, my Tom Petty shirt from the album cover, Full Moon Fever. So happy National Vinyl Record Day. I have hundreds of vinyls at home I inherited. My father gave me his record collection, and I've added a few since. But I have, you know, it's hard. You got everything you need. I don't like to buy new music. I feel like that defeats the purpose. I don't want a new album that comes out, you know, a new band like the Kings of Leon puts out a record on a new album on vinyl. I know that vinyl is supposed to sound the best, but still, like, I want the old classics. That's what you want with the vinyl collections. You don't care about getting new music on a vinyl. So I got all sorts of vinyls, and I have some hanging on the wall. I have some vinyls, or the albums, not the actual record, but the album cover. Whenever I think of vinyl, I think of the actual album and the cover, not the piece of vinyl that you hold and you place, you know, to play. I think of the album cover. So I have certain album covers that I framed on the wall. And I have Abbey Road, The Who's Who's Next, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, and then also Tom Petty's, going back to Tom Petty, Hard Promises. Those were the four albums I went with that I framed. That I thought, what four albums are like the best, like maybe iconic? You probably wouldn't include Tom Petty's Hard Promises in your list, but he is my favorite musician, so I had to include a Tom Petty album. Damn the Torpedoes would be number one, but I think my father actually has that on the wall in the man cave at home, so I couldn't choose that one. So we went with Hard Promises, but those are the four. Abbey Road, Who's Next, where they're all, you know, peeing on whatever that thing is, like stone, and then Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. Classic vinyls. Here on National Vinyl Record Day. Joe, you ever play the record backwards to see if they're saying something about Satan?
I did that when I was a kid, and it just sounded like gibberish.
I imagine so. Is any of that true? Is there any record that actually does have some sort of message when you play it backwards?
The only time such a thing ever occurred is when Judas Priest was actually in a court case in the early 90s. And the judge did say that when played backwards, it does sound like something saying do it. Huh. But he agreed with the jury that it was just a chance combination of sounds and it wasn't really any kind of subliminal message.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And what's really interesting is that the song was from the album Stained Class, and it was Better By You, Better Than Me. And if I'm not mistaken, that was originally a Fleetwood Mac song.
Oh, interesting.
Another interesting piece of information, the song Coming Back, Tainted Love by Soft Cell, is a remake.
That's a remake?
Yeah, it was originally put out in 1964 by Gloria Jones, who lives in infamy among some T-Rex fans because she was driving the car when Mark Bolan was killed in a car accident.
Oh, jeez.
I have a piece of it here.
Of the original?
Yes.
I like this.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away. I've got to get away from the pain you drive into the heart of me.
I did not know that this version existed. I always loved the Soft Cell version, but let me tell you, this one's pretty good. Classic 60s sound. So who is this? Who actually did the original?
Gloria Jones.
Gloria Jones. I like that version. Happy National Vinyl Record Day.
And we had a caller just call in and say that you could go on YouTube and there is something about playing Stairway to Heaven backwards where they supposedly say Hail Satan.
Interesting. Now, Little Nicky, the movie Little Nicky was a joke, but they did it with a Chicago album. And I forget what it says, but something about Satan. And it was very clear in that movie.
Although there was a comedian years ago when this was a big deal in the 80s. He said, yeah, I played mine backwards and I recorded it on this cassette for you. And it just it sounded like a bunch of gibberish. And then it finally says, man, you're really messing up your needle.
You ever sit down and play Dark Side of the Moon while watching Wizard of Oz?
No, I have not, but I've talked to people who have.
Yeah.
And I just wonder who came up with that possibility.
I know it. I've never done it either. I have the album. I don't really care to sit down and actually watch The Wizard of Oz, though. According to VinylVirgins.com, the best vinyl, the best record from each decade, they have The Who, Who's Next for the 70s. That's the best album of the 70s. Of the 80s, they have Pyromania for Def Leppard. And of the 90s, If You're Feeling Sinister by Bell and Sebastian. I don't even know what that is. So there you go. Best vinyls of the decades.
I actually have Pyromania on vinyl.
Yeah?
That my uncle bought for me in the 80s.
Ah, how about that? I don't think I have any Def Leppard vinyls.
Yeah, I still have some 70s pressings of Kiss, and I have my mom's Beatles records from the 60s.
Do you have, because for this list, for the 60s, they have Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts, whatever that album is for the Beatles. They have that as number one from the 60s.
Okay, I don't have that one. I have more of the early ones. I do have Rubber Soul.
Oh, okay.
I have Something New from the Beatles and also the Help soundtrack. Those are the ones I can remember off the top of my head.
I gotcha. I think I have most of the Beatles albums. As I said, Abbey Road's on the wall. Got most of them handed down from my father. What was the one? Was it the Rolling Stones one that when you moved it? It was like one of those you used to get some of the baseball cards that were like that. That was that scratchy material. And when you move the album, it makes it look like they're moving. It was that weird album. I don't really like the album that they put out.
Their Satanic Majesty's Request album?
Yes, that's it, yep.
Now that you mentioned it, I think I have seen that somewhere.
Yeah, and I don't really like that. That's not one of my favorite Rolling Stones albums, but it is a pretty cool cover. And I always enjoyed the Sgt. Pepper's album cover as well. It's the one weird thing about me. Now, if you listen to the show, you probably think there's tons of weird things about this guy. But the one weird thing I'll say is that I just love looking at album covers. I could get lost in record stores. In fact, that's the only thing I'll window shop. I'll go to a record store and just walk around. There's one here in town that I love going to every once in a while. I don't go too often, but every once in a while, or there's like one downtown, right? I'm walking past it. Ooh, a record store. If I'm ever in a town and I see a record store, I have to go in, and I just like perusing. I'll leave there without buying anything, but I'll spend an hour in there just looking around at all the different records they have, picking them up, holding them, looking at the covers. It's something, I don't know what it is. I just love having that album in your hand. Not even the vinyl, like I said. It's not even about the record. Just the album cover. Just looking at it, looking at the back, looking at the liner notes, seeing the songs that are on the album. I always love just going through record stores and looking at the collection. I won't even buy anything. I just like looking at it. That's why I got some vinyls hanging on the wall at home. They're just cool. They're album covers, at least. They're cool to look at. Happy National Vinyl Record Day. All right, so the NFL preseason begins tonight. Later on today, I'm going to give you my best bet tonight. I already gave you a best bet for the entire NFL preseason, but I got another one for tonight. We have two games tonight, and one of them I really like. That's right, I'm telling you, best bets of the NFL preseason. We'll do that a little bit later on. But even if you may think the preseason doesn't matter, there are some people, teams, coaches facing some pressure. Now, we usually do a tasty top five during the NFL season every Friday where I give you the five tastiest football games of the weekend. So instead, we're going to do a tasty top five here of the five players, coaches, teams that are actually under the most pressure this NFL preseason.
Of course, this thing doesn't want to work with us.
Oh, so. Of course.
All right, here we go.
Our tasty top five. There we go.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the tasty top five.
I'm tasty.
Number five.
It was worth the wait just to hear that. Number five, Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. Because for the Saints, you're breaking in a new quarterback with Drew Brees having retired. And you have Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill. Then you have this drama with Michael Thomas. So it's only the preseason, but the Saints, they're one of those teams that we've grown used to, always competing for the division, a playoff spot, being a Super Bowl contender. And if they look bad preseason, if the offense looks unorganized, looks out of place, Jameis Winston doesn't play well, Taysom Hill, Michael Thomas isn't there, if that drama continues to grow, I do think Sean Payton could take a hit this year depending on how the Saints look. He's supposed to be this offensive genius. Well, we'll find out. Makes it a little bit easier when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback. Now you're going to try to make it work with Taysom Hill, who he really loves, or Jameis Winston. Without Michael Thomas there, that whole ordeal's going on. He's calling out Thomas publicly. Thomas is calling out the Saints. It's getting ugly. I think there is some pressure on Sean Payton this preseason just to calm down the fans. Like, hey, we got this. Even though it's only preseason, just show Taysom Hill is capable. Show that Jameis Winston looks better than what he did in Tampa. That you have something to look forward to with this offense this season. Number four, the Dallas Cowboys, just as a team. For a couple of different reasons. Number one, there's pressure on the Cowboys every year. They always have some of the most pressure in the league every year because regardless of whatever their situation is, they're always expected to compete for a Super Bowl. They put those expectations on themselves, and the fan base always has those expectations as well. A lot of pressure on Dallas. Then you factor in not only the normal pressure from a regular season, but also, well, now Dak Prescott is injured. He went for an MRI yesterday. Right, we have heard reports that he can't throw the football at practice. He's doing like underhand tosses. He can't throw overhand. They consulted the Texas Rangers because it's more like a pitcher's injury. You know, Phil Sims said the one time he had arm issues was in 1989 when he had an ankle injury because it just throws. It's almost like when you play Jenga and you pull one piece out and the whole thing falls apart. It's a lot like mechanics for a pitcher or a quarterback. You tweak an ankle. Dak Prescott's been coming back from his dislocated ankle. And as you rehab it, maybe it's not 100% yet, or you're not trusting it. You're overcompensating on the other half of your body because you're fearful of what may happen to your ankle. And it throws your whole body out of whack. That can almost cause other issues in your body, right? And I don't know. I'm no doctor. I haven't seen Dak's injury. I don't know if that's what's causing the arm issue. But Phil Simms said the only time I had arm problems was actually when I had an ankle injury during a season. And it threw my mechanics all out of whack, and then my arm, you know, paid the price. So for Dak with this ankle injury, you wonder if it's tied to it, if it's something that he can overcome this year, or if this is something that is going to be bothering him moving forward. And the last part for the Cowboys, they're on Hard Knocks. You put yourself under a microscope. People are making fun of Mike McCarthy from the first episode of Hard Knocks this week. Mike McCarthy is on the hot seat. He has pressure on him. And every little move he makes in training camp is going to be broken down by the public, by the fans, by the media, by everybody in this country watching their training camp live on TV. Well, not live, but watching it on TV through Hard Knocks every week. So the Cowboys have a lot of pressure on them this preseason, as they always do. Number three of those with the most pressure this preseason, Trevor Lawrence. Number one pick, supposed to be this generational talent. He and even Urban Meyer, just to show that Urban knows what he's doing. Now, Lawrence, I only put number three because I think the assumption will be, even if he gets off to a slow start, we'll all say, he'll be fine. Because we've seen the skill set, won a championship at college, obviously had a great college career, number one pick. Right, we'll be a little more patient with Trevor Lawrence, I believe, even though he's the number one pick. Just a little bit. Jaguars were 1-15 last year. It's Jacksonville. The fans don't care anyways. You know, if he doesn't look very good, it's okay. It's just the preseason. Number two on the list of pressure, Jordan Love. This is the first real look we'll actually get at Jordan Love. There were no preseason games last year. We haven't seen him in a game. You don't even see him in practice. And now this whole issue with Aaron Rodgers, it puts even more pressure on Jordan Love because we've all been wondering, like, is he the guy? If Aaron Rodgers did not come back this year, could Jordan Love actually play? Is he ready? We'll get some sort of look. And so Jordan Love is really going to be judged by these couple of games, fair or not, because we've just never seen him in this situation before. So you'll watch him in these games and you'll think like, oh, no, he looks terrible. And no wonder Rodgers, they needed Rodgers to come back. But if he does look good, I tell you what, if Aaron Rodgers continues to be a problem and if fans start to turn on him and maybe the Packers aren't winning as many games as they would like, fans will point back to this preseason and say, you know what, Jordan looked really good in the preseason. Forget Rodgers and all these headaches. We're not winning with him anyways. Forget all the problems. Let him walk. We'll go with Jordan Love. This is Love's chance to get people on his side, to show what he's capable of, because really, we have no idea. But if he struggles, then it has the opposite effect. Then the Packer fans will say, oh, boy, we need Rodgers next year, too. Don't get rid of him after this season. Jordan Love is not the answer. But number one on this list of those with the most pressure on them this preseason is Zach Wilson. Second quarterback taken. Taken behind Trevor Lawrence. So you may say, well, there should be more pressure on Lawrence than Zach Wilson. The difference is, number one, Zach Wilson's ceiling may not be quite as high or his floor may be lower. I think there's a lot more bust potential for Zach Wilson than Trevor Lawrence. I think there's a lot more concern for Zach Wilson than Trevor Lawrence. We're already getting stories about how bad Zach Wilson has looked this training camp. And then number two, you can't compare New York to Jacksonville. Jets fans are already angry. They're calling the radio stations up there talking about how he's a bust already. He hasn't even played in a preseason game. And he starts Saturday night, week one, against the Giants, which even though it's preseason, it's usually kind of a big deal. Jets-Giants in that stadium. Right, they share that stadium. It's on TV all across New York City. It's a big deal. They try to make it into a big deal. That's the first look at Zach Wilson. Fans are already a little concerned about him. So I think Zach Wilson has the most pressure this preseason. He just needs to show he belongs. Get out there, show some potential, and show that, you know what, he can be something. Those are the five players, coaches, teams with the most pressure this preseason. Trey Lance, not expected to start week one. Right, same with Justin Fields. Plus, Justin Fields was drafted 11th, so he has some more breathing room than Trevor Lawrence drafted first. Justin Fields was drafted 11th. He's not supposed to be the savior right away week one. Mac Jones, probably he's not going to start. You got Cam Newton there taking all the oxygen out of the room. So I don't think there's a lot of pressure on those rookie quarterbacks. But I do think there's pressure on Trevor Lawrence to look the part right away, and certainly Zach Wilson to look the part right away, mainly because he's playing in New York. And those fans are not patient. Jacksonville, those fans, Trevor Lawrence struggles. That's okay. And they're not going to be calling up the radio stations. They're not going to have that media market ripping him apart like you will Zach Wilson if he struggles on Saturday. The five teams, players, coaches under the most pressure this preseason. Coming up, speaking of Trevor Lawrence, is he about to get a new weapon in Jacksonville? We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
If you change your mind, take a chance. I'm the first in line. Honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go when you're feeling down. If you're all alone, when the pretty birds have flown, honey, I'm still free.
Coming up, take a chance on is Trevor Lawrence about to get a new weapon in Jacksonville. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. National Vinyl Day. And Joe cues up some ABBA. Oh,
And, of course, I asked you whether to play this or move on to the next song, which is what I wanted to do.
I don't know what you're
you
talking about.
You made this call.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember that conversation. I do enjoy some
You must have a very bad short-term memory then.
That's right. Bobby criticized some of the music played on the show. I think Joe's just trying to cover his tracks now with a little because he's playing some ABBA. I did okay it. He left it up to me. I said, yeah, let's go with some. I enjoy some ABBA every once in a while, even on national vinyl. I don't think I have any of those vinyl records, any of ABBA's records. I'm going to have to get the Mamma Mia soundtrack. Play that on the vinyl. On the text line, somebody said that version of Tainted Love sounded like the Sesame Street theme song from years ago. I have no idea. I thought the Sesame Street so it was the theme song, wasn't Can You Tell Me How to Get to Sesame Street? That slow, boring song. I guess I'd have to look it up, the similarities. Anyways, we've been talking about the NFL preseason. You know, last segment I said the Saints, specifically Sean Payton, has a lot of pressure on him this preseason for the Saints. Well, Chris Mortensen went on the Max Kellerman show on ESPN Radio yesterday and said Michael Thomas may not play for the Saints again and also may be the next weapon for Trevor Lawrence. Here was Mort yesterday.
I don't know is the correct answer. Mm-hmm. I would speculate that he's not. I think that there's been a pretty good fracture there, lack of trust. I mean, I'm seeing, hearing, you know, the whole, and it's speculative as, from my perspective, but it's smart speculation that, you know, here's Sean Payton yesterday said, we must get another cornerback. In other words, like the guys who cover the receivers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're looking at Jacksonville, where Urban Meyer is, and, you know, when he won his national championship there, I think it was in 2014, but you can check, at Ohio State, Michael Thomas was a stud, was a star on that team. And the Saints actually took Michael Thomas in the second round, and he became a star in the NFL. But you know, here's the thing about it is Trevor Lawrence actually has a lot of good receivers there.
Mm-hmm.
And the corner that the Saints probably would want back was the Saints is the Jaguars' first-round pick last year, C.J. Henderson. He's really good. I don't know that Urban Meyer would give that up for a receiver who let's face it is hurt and recovering and rehabbing
and making a lot
but
of money.
Well, making a lot of money. The cap hits, but you know he's already gotten a good bit of his money.
Right.
You know the cap hits are not overwhelming. $12 million and then nine or six, whatever it is. So. It's really a matter of the communications would probably have to be, you know, Saints give permission to Michael Thomas or his agent to have conversations with the Jags. Jags say, you know, okay, let's talk about it. Or it could be that they say, no, we don't want to talk about it. But
Mort yesterday on Max Kellerman's show here on ESPN Radio. Interesting. He thinks Michael Thomas is done in New Orleans. And if he's moved, could be to Jacksonville to reunite him with his college coach, Urban Meyer. Imagine that. Trevor Lawrence with James Robinson, Carlos Hyde, Travis Etienne in the backfield, and then you'd have DJ Chark, Marvin Jones, Laviska Shenault, even Philip Dorsett, and then Michael Thomas as a wide receiver. Decent offensive line as well. Right, you got your left tackle, Cam Robinson now. I think that'd be a pretty strong offense for a young quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. Urban Meyer helping out on the offensive side, that would be very intriguing. Now, as I understand it, the dead cap hit, if the Saints do trade Michael Thomas, they still have to take on like a dead cap hit of like $38 million. So I don't know if that's in their best interest. But this could get so ugly that they may have no other choice. And it's part of the reason why I think the Saints do take a step back this year in the NFC South. What a weapon, though, that would be for a young quarterback like Trevor Lawrence. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 1 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio.
Could you hear that?
Talking last segment about Michael Thomas potentially working his way out of New Orleans, and if he does, may wind up in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence. If that were to happen, you know, you could get the Jaguars right now plus 900 to win the division. And that division could be wide open. Then maybe factor in Michael Thomas. Could be worth throwing just a couple bucks down on. And ESPN put together their team rankings based off of talent. They had the Saints as just the 17th most talented team this year. That's with Michael Thomas. Part of the reason why I keep saying I think the Saints take a step back this year. I think they'll be this year's Patriots from a year ago. I think they'll have potentially a losing season, but probably won't be much better than right around 500, leaving the door open for the Falcons or Panthers to pass them by in that division. And I'm sure you always get all sorts of random phone calls from telemarketers or scammers, maybe even get some text messages too. I still get texts from this company in Florida that I used to use to clean the apartment. And they texted me this morning right before I came on the air. It was really odd. It included a photo this time. And they said, "Like to book your next cleaning? Please let us know. Also, I do have some Siberian Husky puppies available. Would you like more information about them?" And the photo is a big teddy bear with like three puppies cuddling on the teddy bear. And then I guess this is a Siberian Husky in one of the kennels, the cage behind the teddy bear. Very odd. Find yourself not only a cleaning service that can make the house look real nice, find yourself a cleaning service that can also sell you some Siberian Huskies as well. I don't think I'm going to respond to the text. We'll catch up with Angelo Kelly from the Charleston Battery when we come back. Hour two next. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.